We've been talking a little bit about Jesus' statement, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Then this part that's so important, no one comes to the Father except through me. So graphically, I've tried to depict that if I can. We all start in different places. Some of us start from a background in religious belief. Some people start from a background of no religious belief, really. Some people start from a background of an immoral life. Some start from a background of a moral life. But it really doesn't matter where you start. You must come to God through Jesus. It's the only way that that can happen. But we've been talking a little bit about the different things that we are tempted to put in the place of Jesus. Last week we talked about how there's a temptation to put our family background, our ancestry in the place of Jesus, and think that we come to God through family. Now, family is important. Family does a lot to give us a background in the things that belong to God. But we can't replace Jesus with family. Tonight we're going to talk about people who try to place religion in the place that Jesus has to hold. They try to come to God through their religious belief. And you can't do that. Now, religion is a good thing, in much the same way that family is a good thing. Religion is at least an acknowledgement of a spiritual realm. Now, that realm, that the beings that exist in that realm are invisible to us now, but they are very real. They are no less real than the pew that we sit on. It's just that we don't see them at this point. Now, at some point in the future, when we reach heaven, this earthly realm is done away with, and we exist only in that spiritual realm. We'll know more about that. We just don't know very much about it right now. But people who have a religious background have that background because they acknowledge that there is a spiritual realm. They start with a leg up. They get to say that there is a spiritual realm. And we as Christians, when we speak with our neighbors and our friends, ought to give them respect for that acknowledging that there is a spiritual realm. Now, that's not the same thing as acknowledging that what they believe about the way to get to that spiritual realm is right. I don't believe that it is. But it is an evidence that they believe in the spiritual realm, and we need to acknowledge that. Now, you and I both know that the respect is not always reciprocated. We give them respect. That doesn't mean that they're going to respect us. And many times, those people that are least respectful of our belief in God are people from other religious backgrounds. We've seen that over and over again. Maybe that you've experienced that in your own life. It may be that you have friends who have experienced that. Some of the people that have been recently converted to following Jesus, to coming to God through Jesus, have experienced that even among our fellowship here. Let's look at a couple of passages. Can I get someone to read Matthew 5, verses verse 43 through 48, and then give us your own words about what that particular passage says. Matthew 5, 43 through 48.
My Bible.
Okay. Who wants to read that? Go ahead, Bob.
You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, in order that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous.
Okay. What do you think he's saying there, in your own words?
Well, be like me.
Okay. And in what way can I be like him relative to my neighbors?
God is not a respecter of persons. He treats all men and women equal.
Okay.
And spiritually and actually physically too, I believe.
I think he sends blessings for people who may be trying to replace Jesus with something else.
Rains on the just and the unjust.
Okay, that's the point. So he says it's not going to be necessarily that you love only the people who have or who share your belief that the way to come to God is through Jesus. You love those people who haven't seen that yet. Even those people who have seen it and rejected it, you still love them. You still give them respect. Can somebody read Romans, the 12th chapter, verse 20?
But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. But if he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
Okay. What do you think he's saying there, Andrew?
He's saying to love everyone, no matter who they are to you. There are many people around us that we consider, there are many enemies around us. But we shouldn't show them, we shouldn't, brush them off, but we should show them hospitality and show them the love. Because who knows, us showing that hospitality and love to them, even though our views are completely different, even though they hate us, that may start making them think in a different way. We might be planting the seed right there for them.
True. We may be planting a seed. What if you've planted the seed and they have rejected it? Do you stop giving them respect?
No.
No.
No. You continue to respect them because they're people. Yeah, Bob.
We read through that real quick and not think too hard on it. It seems like keeping burning coals on a person's head is not a good thing, but to me, that means you kind of prick their conscience.
Okay.
So that they might think more seriously about their life.
Right. It might be. Yeah, Carol.
When Bob says that, it reminds me of when David was aware of his sin and he talked about how his body, was like heaping coals, it was a pain for him. His sin was a pain for him, and it got his attention, and so he prayed for forgiveness.
Okay. The that burning coal kind of imagery is probably from Isaiah. where Isaiah said, I wanted to keep quiet, but your words burned in me like a burning ember. You know, it's not that he's saying do good to your enemy because you can, by doing good to him, get him back. Heap burning coals on his head. Repay him for what he's done to you. That's not the point. It will heap burning coals on his head. And I think Bob has touched on, and Carol has touched on, what I think the outcome of that is. Our goal is not to disrespect or to denigrate those people that we have contact with, and that's most of the people that we have contact with who have some kind of religious belief about God, but they don't acknowledge it. And you have to accept the fact that not all religion leads to God. There's some religion that leads away from God. And there are religious groups who believe that Jesus was not the Son of God, but that he was a great prophet. There are some religious groups that believe that Jesus was a created being like the angels. So there are some groups that are open about not acknowledging Jesus. And then there are other groups that are worse. They acknowledge that Jesus is the Son of God, but their allegiance is not to Jesus. Their allegiance is to a religion. And we're familiar with that. Somebody want to read Galatians 4, verses 8 and 9? Go ahead.
Formerly, when you did not know God, you were slaves to those who by nature are not gods. But now that you know God, or rather are known by God, how is it that you are turning back to those weak and miserable forces? Do you wish to be enslaved by them all over again?
So this is, what do you think he's saying when he writes this?
Well, he's reminding them why they came to God in the first place. And do you really want to go back to them? You want to leave God for this that was failing you before, that you seeked God out and found his freedom and his salvation?
Okay. Yeah, he's acknowledging that there are some people who came to a knowledge about God having first had some religious background. They believed some things about the spiritual realm. Now, he says, you were enslaved by gods who are really not gods. You had the wrong picture of what God is. And that picture of what God is most clearly revealed in Jesus. Remember his statement to Peter who said, show us the Father. And Jesus said, have I been with you so long and you still don't understand that if you've seen me, you've seen God? There are a lot of religious groups who, though they acknowledge Jesus as the Son of God, don't want Jesus to be in the position of leadership, of ownership over them. They give their allegiance to a church. And that's terribly dangerous. Because many times if you talk to them and say, well, you're not letting Jesus take his rightful place in your life, they say, but Jesus has his rightful place in the church, and we listen to the church. Have you heard that? I've heard that a lot. I've even heard that, sadly, from people that I worship with who say, I don't listen to God, but I listen to the church. And that's substituting church into Jesus' rightful place. And you can't do that. That's not going to get you to God. Yeah, Bill.
I think that type of belief is somehow, they think if they listen to the church, they can dismiss the part of the Bible that the church doesn't talk about.
Could be.
Because we believe, if we are correct, the whole Bible, everything God has said, has something to say to us, not just things that the church picks and chooses.
Okay. But the only way you're going to get that is through your own personal study. You have a responsibility to let God speak to your life, to understand what God is saying to you. You do not satisfy that responsibility by saying, I'll listen to what the church says. That elevates the church to a position that it shouldn't have. And churches are important. They do help us. They're a part of our walk towards God. But that's not the way that we find out about salvation. Yeah.
The easiest thing to understand how wrong that is Jesus the head, the church is the body. And if you're listening to the body, you're listening to the aches and pains and whatever and not listening to what the head says you're supposed to do.
That's a good way to say it. That's a pretty good way to say it. Yeah, Kim.
When we are in the business of discipling and introducing people to Jesus Christ, I think that's what we have to keep in mind, is that we're introducing them to Jesus. We're not trying to convert them to the church or anything else. We're trying to convert them to Jesus and have a relationship with Jesus. The rest of it will come. The rest of it will certainly come, because they'll have to find a family of believers who can support them in this relationship with Jesus Christ appropriately. But I think that sometimes we get it kind of mixed up in our heads, and we think that we're converting people to the church. And we're not. We need to be converting and teaching people to have a relationship with Jesus Christ.
And when we establish that relationship in baptism, God adds us to the church. He adds us to the body. Now, we will look for a group of people of like faith, and we will attempt to join ourselves to them, because, and they are important because they're part of the body and they're helping us get closer to God. But remember, the local body might exercise itself to say, you can't worship with us. Acts 9, the group in Jerusalem told Paul, when he essayed to join himself to them, he'd already been added to the church. He was baptized. That was something that God did, and no man anywhere can ever take you out of that. But that local body in Jerusalem said, no, you can't worship with us. And it wasn't until Barnabas stood up for Paul and said, yeah, he really has been converted, that they were willing to accept him. And then he became an integral part of that family unit that was there in Jerusalem. But remember, the family unit, what we think of as being the church, cannot give you grace. Only God does that. Only Jesus can do that, can give you mercy. The church can't do that. And so when we talk about the importance of the body, it is important. It's incredibly important. And that was one of the problems that they had in Corinth. They were taking the Lord's Supper and they weren't discerning the body, because they said, we're important, you're not. We have a lot, you don't. So we're going to cause division in this local assembly. And he says, you can't take the supper that way. You must discern the body. But remember, I'm everybody knows that I'm a fan of B.O. Skinner, B.S. Skinner. So knowing that, you know that I've read a lot of what he has written. He was a Catholic. He left the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church said, if you don't do what we tell you to do, we will withhold grace from you. That's substituting the church and its dictates for Jesus and what Jesus says. Now, it was the wrong body. I understand that. But don't think that you come to God through the church. The church is what helps you as you come to God through Jesus. The two different things. Church is important. Just keep it in its place. There's the statement. John 14, verse 6. We're going to return to that statement every time we talk about different things that people substitute for Jesus. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father except through me. There's the graphic representation of that. Except that, notice that there are people who believe that religious zeal can replace Jesus. And it can't. There is no way. So, all that being said, the question is, how do we relate to our friends who've made this mistake, this basic error of putting a church or religious zeal in the place of Jesus? How do we respond? Well, I have four different things that I think are important. First, respect that they have a decision that they have made, a decision to believe in the reality of a spiritual realm. That doesn't mean that you consider what they believe to be right, but you respect the decision to believe in the spiritual realm. Don't ever denigrate that. In fact, praise them because they have decided that this spiritual realm is real. So that's first point. Second point, try to understand where they are before you tell them what they need to do. And I'm really bad about jumping to conclusions. That's my problem. I'm particularly and acutely aware of that difficulty that I have. So I need to back up and I need to ask two questions, at least as I perceive it. If I encounter someone who's put religious zeal or church membership or following a church in the place of Jesus, I need to ask that person, why did you choose to follow that religious path? And I need to listen to the answer that they give me, not formulate a response as quick as they start talking. So I need to ask them, why did you choose to follow this religious path? And you'll hear all kinds of different answers to that question. Second question that I need to ask is, without putting them on the spot, I just need to ask, is it fulfilling? Or is something still missing? And I think most people are, if they're thinking about a spiritual realm, are going to be attuned to the idea that something is missing. If the church says that they can withhold grace, something's wrong. And this one, again, is directed right at me, because that's what I do. Remember, you aren't trying to win an argument. You're trying to lead somebody to God, trying to help them come to Jesus so that they can access the Father. And my particular downfall is I warm up to the argument. And I want to win in the worst possible way, to construct a logical argument that they cannot answer and then beat them over the head with it. I don't want to just win the argument. Kim will tell you, I have a tendency to want to leave them in the gutter bleeding. And that isn't going to lead anybody to God. Mm. Yeah, Carol.
I think that if we, most of us, look at it, there was something missing in our life, and we were looking and found, and God, it found out that it was the answer. He had the answers of what was missing in our life. It's sort of like if you think about somebody who has a problem with drinking. If they don't think that there's anything missing in their life, they don't think that there's anything wrong with their life, there's nothing missing, you almost have no option to be able to get them off of that course. They've chosen that course, and until they see that they need something different, they need something, they need God, they're not going to be swayed by your persuasive argument.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark Twain said, a man who is persuaded against his will is still unpersuaded. And I think he's probably right. Kim?
I think that it's easier to respect people when you view everyone as a seeker. I view myself as a seeker. Even though I have attained salvation through Jesus Christ, I'm always constantly seeking to be closer to him, to learn how to live more like he has designed me to live. And so I'm constantly seeking. And if I give other people, I attribute that to other people, I just think they're on a different place on their journey than I am at the moment. And it's easy to respect that. But when you come in contact with someone who puts their own opinion or other people's opinion on the same plane as God and his revelation, hard to reason with those people. Really hard. And so that's when having the respect for their decision to believe, although that belief is very broad, is very difficult for me. As long as I see them as a seeker, I have an easier time of attributing respect to them, regardless of where they are in that continuum, because it is a continuum. Like Carol said, I don't know if Carol used the word, but she alluded to this. I mean, you think of this, is that we all are seekers. We all, before we came to Christ, we may not have known what we were seeking. We may not have known. We might have been able to articulate that there was something missing, but maybe not. But at some point, we became a seeker.
Or maybe not yet.
Or maybe not yet. I like that word, too, is yet. You know, and it's kind of like Jenny said, she teaches sixth grade. She always tells the kids, when the kids go, well, I can't read that. She says, well, you can't read it yet. But you're going to be able to read it. We're going to get you there. And I like that. Or I can't solve that problem. And she always adds, yet. So anyway, I just wanted to put that in there. Sometimes that respect is really hard, and other times it's easier, but it's because of what we attribute to that person.
Yeah.
If we make a pre-decision and we say, oh, they'll never believe. Pretty likely we're not going to be presenting them with the truth, and we're not going to be presenting them with, you know, we're probably more likely to be in that position that we're trying to win an argument rather than lead someone to God.
Or even worse, we say, you're following the wrong church.
Yeah.
And that's not biblical ideas. You're following the wrong church. You need to follow the right church. But that's still substituting church for Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah, Bill.
When I was a young believer, so I thought I was already saved because I had people lay their hands on me and pray over me. Mm-hmm. But one day I needed to talk to the preacher because he was asking why I called myself a member of the Church of Christ. And I said, well, this is my salvation experience. Uh-huh. And he said, well, there's one thing I needed to be baptized. And I said, can you show me two scriptures? He did. And I was. But I didn't feel anything was missing. When he told me this, says this is something I have to have if I'm going to be saved. And I think now I can really feel like I am saved.
Yeah. That's a good point. We're all on the journey. Sometimes we realize what's missing. Sometimes we don't realize what's missing. We're just not fulfilled. So help them come to a knowledge of God. We all walk in ignorance. Remember that the important role that ignorance plays in 1 Peter, where we've been studying on Sunday morning. Ignorance is what gets in the way. Our job is not to disparage their faith. Our job is to properly inform their faith. So help them out of ignorance. Give them what's missing. And what's missing in their approach to God is Jesus. Okay. Kim, you look like you're anxious to say something and afraid to raise your hand.
Oh, no, but you know, I've always got something to say. No, I wasn't wanting to say anything, but I will. It just made me reflect. I like the way on Sunday mornings in particular, when you're doing the announcements and you're welcoming the visitors, and you acknowledge that they're on a path in faith, that you know, and that we're hoping that what we do during the assembly while we're worshiping God will help them get a little bit closer to God. And I really like that because I think that's very respectful. You're not telling somebody, you know what, I'm so glad you're here because you're such a rank sinner. You know, you're just saying, I know that you're on a journey. You're on a journey, and if we can help you on that journey, that's what we want to do. And we hope that today was a blessing to you. I think that is just a respectful way to welcome visitors into our assembly when we're worshiping God. And it's not about, like we made the observation, and Bob made the observation this morning, and you too. It's not really about us. It's about we're here to worship God. But we want other people to feel welcome and feel like on this journey with us.
Yeah, I thought what Bob had to say this morning when we began our worship was absolutely appropriate. I think it's a good approach. We don't want to be rote about it, but I think what he had to say was excellent. We're here to worship God. We're glad you're here too. Okay. I will just mention to you that this is some reading that I found helpful. If you want a copy of this, there's a URL that you can look at, and you can read through a person from a different faith than what I think is the faith, who was talking about having respect for other people who aren't where we are. So if you want to read this, it's not very long, it's 5 or 6 pages, but I thought he did a good job distilling some of this. And he was talking about people who live in foreign cultures where their culture is very different than ours. And whenever they greet a religious leader of any kind, they always fold their hands and bow. And the question was, should I fold my hands and bow? So it's a way of looking at how we can show respect for people and the journey that they're on without accepting the journey that they're on as an appropriate way to find their way to God. Okay, that'll be up on the website. The slides go up on the website later tonight. And if you're interested, or if you don't want to go through the headache of finding all of the slides, just talk with me and I'll give you this link. I can email it to you very easily.